This is October 9th, Sunday, October 9th, and I'm going to ask the first question, which is, in Buddhism, we bow to Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Could you just talk a little bit about each of these three, thinking in terms of people who essentially know nothing about Buddhism? So if they understand that people are taking three treasure bows and it's Buddha, Dharma, Sangha.
Well, I think that when we talk about Buddha, we are really talking about the ultimate nature of our existence. A parallel might be what Christians and other religions might refer to as God. And so our Buddha nature is essentially our true nature, the nature that we have in reality, instead of any nature that we might ascribe to ourselves with our minds. One might liken it to the whole universe as it is, so the Buddha being the universe. The Buddha also being the potential that we have inside of ourselves to awaken to the experience of that, so that it's not just a concept in our mind, but it's something that we actually practice and have a real experience of seeing that that is true. Dharma could be considered the teachings that have evolved in Buddhism to help us come to that experience, and also the phenomenal universe itself, the forms that are in the universe, our bodies, our emotions, objects that we experience, all of those are called the dharmas. So it's the form, the expression of the Buddha nature in reality. So there's a saying in Buddhism that all dharmas are real things, right? They're not abstract concepts. The teachings, when we talk about dharma as a teaching, we think of them more in terms of medications, you might say, because the Buddha was called the great physician. And what he would do when someone came before him to talk and ask him about what is Buddhism, what are your teachings, it was really customized to that person. What was that person suffering from? What was going on in their mind that made it where they did not experience the universe in the way that he had? And so he would prescribe to them something to do, to practice. An example might be the practice of meditation. We would prescribe that you would sit and follow the breath and be mindful. Or we might use the teaching of emptiness and help one realize that, you know, all things are very interconnected and they're not separate. So that would be an example of Dharma. Sangha would then be the community of people that are practicing this, the community of people that are striving to realize the Buddha nature, and not just intellectually curious about it, but are actually practicing and trying to put it into practice in their life. And usually the form the sanghas take are around groups that practice. So for instance, the group that we have in Chattanooga that comes together once a week to meditate, we would think of ourselves as a sangha. But we also try to broaden that and think that, okay, all beings, all people are on the path, whether it's the Buddhist path or a Christian path or whatever. We're all, in one way or another, on the path. And so we would also have that aspect of thinking it's all sentient beings are either actively engaged in the Sangha or are potential Sangha.
Mm-hmm. Just sitting is considered to be one of the basis of Zen practice. Why do Buddhists spend hours in meditation? Why is that such an important part of the practice?
One of the things that we typically have a hard time doing is concentrating or being focused on the thing that we are actively engaged in doing. We might be cooking and thinking of something else, planning our budgets or this or that while we're actually cooking. So we're missing the experience of cooking to a large degree. And our minds are very diversified and thinking about many different things. So when we talk about just sitting, what we mean is, okay, if you are sitting, you should be essentially just sitting and be wholly committed to that activity. If you are walking, you could say, I'm just walking. And it's really about a percentage of our consciousness and our minds that we're bringing into the activity that we're engaged in, so that we become more mindful and more present, regardless of what it is we're doing. This naturally can't help but improve our behavior and improve us as we go through our life and anything that we're doing. Of course, the more mindful we are when we drive a car, the better of a driver we're going to be. The more mindful I am going to be when I sit and experience the emotions and thoughts that come up, the more I'm going to be in touch with and understand myself. Because when I sit in a room, when I face a wall, when I assume the position of meditation, that's what I'm left with. I'm left with the things that are coming up inside of me. It's less about the external things that are going on. So now I'm faced with this whelm of emotion and thought and activity that's coming up in my mind that is preventing me in a large way from having the experience of just sitting here. And if we have that experience of just sitting, then that infuses the rest of our life with more mindfulness as well. So we try to extend that experience into everything that we do after we finish sitting.
This is a question I thought might be of interest to people who, again, have very little experience of Buddhism. Are the Buddhist precepts the equivalent of the Ten Commandments?
No, they're not. The Ten Commandments, I think, were given to the people at the time in an appropriate way for what they needed. The Buddhist precepts also, in a different culture, evolved to represent what that culture needed, and they have continued to evolve over time. I think at the heart of them, they become very, very similar, but if you read the words of them, there are some different ones. Certainly don't kill, you know, being the first precept. But we also like to say them in the positive rather than just in the negative. So we would say to affirm life instead of just don't kill. One could say, all right, well, if I just go through life and don't kill anybody, I've lived up to that first precept. But not really, because if you don't go through life affirming life, then you haven't lived up to the precept. So it's not just negation. It's also the positive.
Mm-hmm. And the final question would be, again, thinking about the audience that will be listening eventually to what we're talking about today, what do you feel are the most common misconceptions about Buddhism that perhaps a lot of Americans not familiar with Buddhism may have?
I think that one of the things that people say is that Buddhism is not a religion, that it's just a philosophy, or if it's it's a way of life. And they tend to, at least I've heard it sometimes used in kind of a dismissive way, as if to say, all right, well, Christianity is a religion and therefore somehow elevated to this status that Buddhism doesn't have. And I don't feel that way. I feel like in all the important ways that a religion is a religion, helping us to reunify our experience of life with the reality of life, or the reality of God, if it would be in Christianity. There's this goal in Christianity to eventually be unified with God, whether that be in this life or in heaven. There's also this experience in Buddhism to experience our Buddha nature in a real way, which is the equivalent of that reunification. Sometimes we call it enlightenment. Sometimes we call it awakening. But I feel like in the important ways, Buddhism is a religion. But I also think that the term religion in general is misused. So one of the things that I believe is that if Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha, all the leaders or founders of these great religions were all sitting in a room together, they'd have nothing to argue about. They'd have only love and respect for each other.
Okay, wonderful. We're going to say the four vows that are said at the end of Zazen sitting, and then we will hear the gongs, and then we will hear them chanted, the same four vows chanted.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it.
Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it.